Hi, I'm Maria Feldman, the Director of Operations at Reveal. I'm part of a big team of people who are behind the scenes that make the show possible each week. We have staff all across the country, from Tampa to Portland to Oakland, California, and I help set up systems that keep us all connected. And most importantly, I process payroll, so I make sure we all get paid. We're a nonprofit organization, and members like you keep us going. Text the word REVEAL to 474747 to show your support. You can text STOP at any time. Standard data rates apply. Again, to support this work, just text the word REVEAL to 474747. Thank you.
REVEAL is supported by Progressive. Progressive has you covered when it comes to car insurance. Starting with built-in savings, like discounts for being a safe driver. You can also save when you start your quote online or have multiple vehicles on your policy. In fact, drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Start a quote online and see all the discounts for yourself. Visit progressive.com today. National annual average auto insurance savings by new customers surveyed in 2019. Potential savings will vary. Discounts vary and are not available in all states and situations.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Ledzin. Sonia Deza is following a familiar route to her bank. She's driving through the streets of Antioch, California, a sprawling commuter city about an hour northeast of San Francisco.
Turn right onto Pruitt Ranch Drive.
Chain restaurants like Chili's and Panda Express fill peach and beige strip malls. Sonia's heading to one now.
We go there in Bank of America and Brentwood.
The sight of the bank brings back some bad memories.
I feel sad at that time.
Sonia is now 67 years old. Originally from the Philippines, she has a serious face that instantly softens when she smiles.
That's it.
Arrived.
Last time she was at this bank, Sonia was with a boss. And as she gets out of the car now, she scans the parking lot, worrying that he might be around. So she puts on her sunglasses as kind of a disguise.
I'm hiding, you never know.
She says her boss brought her to this bank to cash a check he had written her, for back pay he owed her.
I had to go in line. Then I signed the check at the back, my name, Sonia Deza. I cast the check, I'll get the money, $8,866 in my hands.
$8,866.
I walk to the car and I hold the money like this. I keep it like this. I said to myself, oh, this is my money. Oh, it's a lot of money, a big money.
Sonia says her boss made her cash that check and another one totaling more than $17,000. And then, she says, he made her hand the money over to him, all but $1,000.
I said, where's the money? She didn't say nothing. That's my money, I said.
Sonia has no savings, no retirement account, no safety net. For years, she took care of seniors in a residential care home. And the story of why she was forced to cash that check sheds light on an industry rife with exploitation. Reveal's Jennifer Gollin investigated this industry for a year. And after our story first aired in 2019, authorities finally took action, helping Sonia and other employees like her. As Jennifer explains, this model is a huge moneymaker for the business owners who have found an untapped market.
So we all know that baby boomers are getting older, and while some people can continue to live on their own with their families, there's also a growing part of the population that needs a place to stay. That's where these residential care facilities come in. There are about 29,000 across the U.S., and many were once single-family homes that these owners have converted into assisted living for seniors. The ones we're talking about today, they typically have 6 to 10 residents.
So why is the care home industry growing so fast right now?
Well, there's a bunch of reasons. Wouldn't you want to be in a nice home versus an institution?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, the beauty of them is they're tucked into these small neighborhoods and they provide a home-like setting for seniors. They get to know the caregivers really well because these caregivers are often on duty around the clock. And these are often cheaper alternatives to nursing homes. But there's a dark side.
You mean like what happened to Sonia?
Exactly. Regulation is really lax, so these places just don't face much oversight, and that's led to rampant exploitation.
So how'd you find Sonia?
Well, I stumbled on Sonia's case because I was actually taking a look at her boss, Ramel Publico. Ramel and his wife, they own a chain of 4 care homes, and each one has caregivers, just like Sonia, and they've all got stories.
So how did she end up at the bank cashing a check for her boss?
Well, that's what I wanted to find out. So I went to visit her.
Hi.
Okay.
Sonia?
Hi.
Can we go now there?
I've been talking to Sonia for months on the phone before I finally meet up with her in person at her sister's house.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Good.
This is the part of the story where you normally hear a dog barking at the reporter as they walk in. But the dogs in this house, they're frozen. They're actually porcelain figures.
No
she
dog?
She doesn't own... Oh, I love it. I was wanting to pet this one because he was real.
I don't know about this.
Sonia came to the U.S. in 2000 after her husband passed away. She was here to look after her dad, who was already here. And she really needed a job.
Send money to the Philippines to support them, to support my family.
In 2012, she ran into Ramel's sister.
And she said, oh, you want to apply to Ramel? Yes, yes. I have no job.
So Ramel hired her to be a live-in caregiver at one of his homes. She'd be one of 2 workers taking care of up to 6 residents.
My salary is only $50 in 24 hours.
That breaks down to $2 an hour. To put that in perspective, the federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. So by paying his employees less than minimum wage, Ramel was breaking the law. On top of that, Sonia says if she wanted to get that one day off a week...
You need to find a reliever and you'd be the one to deduct your salary.
Basically, she'd have to find someone to fill in for her and then she'd have to pay that person out of her own pocket.
Because I need a job, because I don't have a job, I accept it. I have no complaint because I need to support my family in the Philippines. 2 daughters and 2 grandkids, yeah.
I met another woman who worked for Ramel. Her name is Norma Lim.
My girlfriend referred me to Ramel Publico. That's where I met him.
Norma goes by Normita. She met Ramel and his wife, Glenda, in 2009. Normita says Ramel is a real charmer.
Well, he's a sweet man, believe me. The wife is nice. Glenda, they're very sweet. He knows how to flirt. He knows how to grease on you. That's Ramel. Yeah, you cannot get angry with him because he knows how to make you feel good. I had no complaint. The only problem is he tried to cheat us.
Before Normita met Ramel, she was a professional poker dealer. But then she had a stroke and was left partially paralyzed. She wasn't sure what to do. She was in her 60s and she just didn't have a lot of options. Then she met Ramel and she felt like her luck had changed. He offered her the same deal Sonia had, $50 a day.
I'm kind of disabled and an old lady. Patients love my cooking and I had no problem in the beginning. I was glad that I had a job.
So you were effectively earning $2 an hour.
Oh, well, I did not even think about that. Yeah, that was very low.
Normita loved the residents. They had fun together. They'd eat meals as a group and watch soap operas together in the living room. The house had lots of space, 2,500 square feet. But with up to 6 residents at a time, the work was relentless. It was like being the housekeeper, cook, nurse, maid, all rolled up into one. And if you listen to Sonia...
I woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
And Normita...
And prepare for the breakfast.
As they take us through their typical workday...
Feed the 6 patients.
Their experiences sound nearly identical.
At around 7 o'clock, they have to clean to the bathroom.
And then after that, I clean up the kitchen.
Clean the rooms. 1, 2, 3, 4. 5 bedrooms there. You have to vacuum the floor.
Give them their medication.
You know, cleaning.
And then get ready for lunch. And then feed them. And then after that,
bring the patient to the, you know, the bathroom.
Clean the kitchen and then prepare for dinner.
The same routine.
I'm not really off because I stay in. You cannot sleep all night. I'm going to be calling, you know.
Help, help. You need to be patient to the patient.
All night long. Because
sometimes your patient is crazy. Sometimes they are fighting with you.
They make a mess in their bed.
We change the diaper. Yeah, every 2 hours.
Change them. Change the bed sheets. Clean them up.
Because we stay here, so we need to help our patient. This is our job.
And if one of the residents died, Normita says Ramel would cut her pay by $100 that month. Were you ever allowed to leave the facility?
No, we cannot leave. I have to ask permission. He said nobody will take over, so.
She didn't even get Christmas off. Instead, there'd be a big party right there at the care home.
Christmas and Thanksgiving, holidays, we work. I'm telling you, no day off. There's no day off.
So you had this great connection with so many of your patients, yet you were exhausted.
Well, for me, I feel nothing. Job is job for me, you know. I just take what they give, the owner give, you know.
She was willing to put up with it and never reported Ramel because she didn't want to lose her job. Other employees stayed quiet because they were worried about their legal status in the U.S. Ramel is from the Philippines, like Normita and Sonia. He found them and other workers by tapping into a network of Filipino immigrants in the San Francisco Bay Area.
This is probably the best place to come if you want to get a job as a caregiver.
This is Valerie Francisco Manchavez. She's writing a book about the caregiving industry. She lives just south of San Francisco in Daly City.
This is Little Manila, Pinoy capital, the center for Filipino-American, you know, immigration coming in.
Valerie was born in the Philippines. She moved here when she was 9 and was actually partially raised in a care home. It's where her grandparents worked.
My sister, my brother, and my mother and I shared one room next to a kitchen. We, as children, helped them take care of the elderly folks in that care home. We would get up from 6 a.m. and have a schedule of domestic tasks all the way to 10 p.m.
She's now a sociology professor at San Francisco State University, specializing in labor and the Filipino diaspora. And she talks about a specific cultural dynamic in the Filipino employer-employee relationship that can too easily slide into exploitation. The literal translation is a debt of one's inner self.
This idea of utang ng loob is a cultural idea that you feel obligated and indebted to someone who gave you a kindness, who did you a favor by giving you a job.
This has to do with an almost feudal class system in the Philippines. Valerie says her grandparents had that relationship with their boss.
Because they thought that this person, who was another Filipino that owned the care home, was doing them this favor, this great kindness, to allow them to have a new life in the United States.
Valerie says there's another Filipino concept at play here. It's called kapwa.
Kapwa means a being togetherness. It is a way that Filipinos see their social relations with one another as about uplifting the collective good.
She says the circle of kapwa can extend to fellow co-workers, the residents they care for, the families back in the Philippines, and even their employer.
When Ramel offers them to have a holiday at the care home, they continue to work. If you feel like your care home owner or the elderly folks are your family, you won't want to leave because you're already, quote unquote, spending time with your family, which is an obvious breach of work conditions.
I spoke to dozens of caregivers. They all told me how they were overworked and underpaid, but they rarely reported it to authorities. I asked Normita if she ever complained.
I did not complain. I'm not a complainer. I never complained. That's why they love me. You know.
but someone must have complained. I found that out after calling federal regulators and reviewing reams of court documents from cases all over the country. I uncovered case after case of wage theft. That's when an employer doesn't pay for all the hours that someone's worked. Operators were breaking minimum wage, overtime, and record-keeping laws. Nationwide, I found 1,400 cases. About a third of them were in California. And one of them jumped out at me. Ramel and Glenda Publico. In 2013, they were ordered to pay more than $133,000 in back wages to 22 employees, including Sonia. That's how she ended up in that strip mall parking lot with that check.
You want me to show it to you, the paper that you need me to sign? I forgot my glasses.
Sonia still has the paperwork from the Department of Labor.
I will show it to you.
It said Ramel owed her more than $17,000 in back wages. The money was a surprise. She hadn't realized Ramel was breaking U.S. labor laws. And now he was asking her to sign the paper to prove to the government that he'd paid her the money.
I said, what is this? I don't know what is this. Why should I sign this? Before I sign this, I need a check. Where is the check?
Eventually, he gave her the check, and she agreed to sign that document for Ramel. But that moment of victory, it was fleeting. Because remember at the bank, Ramel made Sonia hand all the money back to him.
What was going through your head at that moment?
Why is Ramel doing that to me? What do you think of me? I'm sad because that's my money. Why? We worked 24 hours in that care home. She's a liar. He's greedy. I think he's greedy.
Sonia tells me that later, she was mad at herself for giving the money back. But she felt like she didn't even have a choice.
What can I do? I'm afraid because I think he will fire me. If he will fire me, where can I go?
Ramel says he didn't do anything wrong, that he treated his workers fairly. But three other employees say that Ramel also made them return back wages. As for Normita, she never even got a check. She and Sonia keep working for him, hoping things will get better. And they do, a little. He gives them a raise, a small one, and Sonia gets Sundays off without having to pay her replacement. But not much else changes, for now.
Federal regulators already came down on Ramel, but what he doesn't realize is that other investigators will soon be taking a closer look.
So on the day that we do the search warrant, we knock on the door.
At this point, you might be wondering, how does anyone even get into this business? It turns out there's a whole industry out there to help people get started.
I do not know of another business model like that. That is why we call America's untapped business opportunity.
That's next on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. Today, we're revisiting an investigation that we originally aired in 2019. It's the story of two women, Sonia Deza and Normita Lim. For years, they took care of seniors in a residential care home. They liked being caretakers, but it was around-the-clock work for less than $3 an hour. For a while, Normita and Sonia didn't quit or complain. They worried they'd be easily replaced. This is a booming industry with the potential to make a lot of money for the people who own the care homes. One quick Google search can get them started.
And today, communication is going to be about how do you make money owning a residential assisted living facility. Show me the money.
YouTube is full of videos like this one from something called Assisted Living University. They have lots of advice on how to get started. For small residential care homes, the bar is pretty low.
I have no formal training in caregiving. I've never been a caregiver before, and nor do I have any formal medical training or background.
No formal medical training. So what do you need? First, a piece of real estate to convert into a care home. Then a state license. In California, that means initially taking an 80-hour training course that focuses mainly on administrative stuff. If you want to work in a care home like Sonia and Armita, you only need 40 hours of training. This is in a state that requires a manicurist to get 10 times that amount. And once your business is up and running, you can pull in more than $250,000 a year with just 6 clients.
I do not know of another business model like that. That is why we call it America's Untapped Business Opportunity. This is called income. Because it's really coming in. This is called income.
People who want to make that income have a lot of support. Reveals Jennifer Garland meets up with a man who could help their money-making dreams come true.
When I meet Ron Simpson, he tells me he's making plans to go paragliding.
There's an airport where we live in Paris.
That's Paris, California, near where Ron lives. And Ron looks like he's living the Southern California dream. He's in his 70s, with glistening silver hair, a perfect tan peeking out from the top of his unbuttoned shirt. I offer him coffee, but he asks for tea.
I get the yogi tea at Pilates, and it's a lot weaker than this dandelion tea that you've given me.
Ron got into the care home business when his wife's grandmother, who we call Granny, needed more help. They had put her in a nursing home, but she hated it. One day, Ron had an idea.
So I'm lying in bed watching a Buffalo Bills playoff football game, went through the Sunday Times, found 4 houses for rent, looked at them all that day and rented a house that day.
They moved Granny in, and Ron says within weeks, her health improved so much, he thought to himself, I should do this for a living. He didn't have any kind of training in caregiving, but he quit his job in product development, bought a house, and got to work.
Started late 94, early 95, taking care of other residents as well as Granny, and been doing it ever since. Oh, it's the most rewarding, fulfilling thing I've done in my life.
So fulfilling that Ron helped start a group called Six Beds. It represents more than 1,000 other small care home operators like him who run places with 6 beds or less. The group lobbies for laws that are good for business, and it holds public workshops to educate people already in the field or who are thinking about getting started. I visited one recently at an auditorium in Los Angeles.
We want to get started. So if people could find their seats.
Ron's giving the intro speech in front of about 100 people. It's a mix of men and women, mostly white and Filipino, dressed business casual. Coffee and styrofoam cups and browning bananas set out as snacks. An American flag hangs at the front of the room.
We're going to start with a Pledge of Allegiance.
In the afternoon session, labor regulators explain the labor laws that apply to the industry. And then there's the State Department of Social Services, which licenses care home operators. They're there, too. But all that came after spending the morning listening to people who had a different kind of message. They were saying, yes, you have to follow the laws, but they also had lots of advice on how to do the bare minimum for maximum profits. And the biggest place to cut costs? Employees.
Thanks, Ron, for the intro. I appreciate it.
George Koutnarian takes the mic. He oversees public policy and legislation for Six Beds, and he's all about saving money. For example, the law requires private quarters for the caregivers, but George says,
they don't say a bedroom as under local zoning laws. They always use the term quarters, in my opinion. The garage, if it meets all the furnishing requirements, should count as quarters. Again, is there some gray area? Sure, but they never use the term bedroom. Has to be home-like.
I spoke with caregivers who did sleep in the garage, on the living room sofa, even on the floor. I also found a case where an operator charged caregivers $25 a day for their lodging. As George wraps up his talk, he encourages care homeowners to, quote, respectfully push back on the Department of Social Services, or DSS, if they ask you to do something that could cut into profit.
So there's this assumption that the DSS says that you have to have 2 workers all the time. That's also not true, okay? So these are all myths. These are all myths that we need to dispel, because a lot of times what DSS maybe has been asking you isn't going to work from a wage and hour standpoint. You know, if
if you get a claim or a lawsuit.
Some of what I heard in that workshop seemed to put profits over employees. And I wondered if that kind of message could lead some employers to think, well, it's okay to take advantage of workers. For example, George clearly told the crowd that they don't really need two caregivers to run a six-bed facility. Here's what Ron Simpson said about that when I asked him.
I don't know anybody these days that uses one caregiver.
But when he got started in this business 25 years ago...
It wasn't unusual for a six-bed facility to get by with one caregiver, because most of the people in those homes then were fairly independent. Now, there's hardly any home that doesn't have at least two caregivers.
But that's not what I found. I uncovered cases from the past few years where just one caregiver was on duty, caring for six residents around the clock, unable to leave the home, even for doctor's appointments. But Ron tries to convince me that that just isn't happening anymore.
So it sounds like you're saying that operators who didn't play by the rules and didn't pay their workers properly is a thing of the past. Is that right?
Yeah, it doesn't sound nice to phrase it like they're not playing by the rules. I think that most everybody that does this work does it because they care about the elderly and to try to make their life as joyful as it can be when they get to the point where they're not independent. And they don't necessarily think about or know exactly what's involved with labor requirements.
And Ron says it's not just the owners who are in it for altruistic reasons. The employees are too. And he says what's upsetting workers is the increased scrutiny and bad press around wage theft and abuse.
Until the audits started and the publicity started that would give this industry a bad name, the caregivers were really happy with their situation.
Why were they happy? Because
they had a place where they could live. They loved what they were doing. They were fulfilled by enriching somebody else's life. Were there exceptions? Yeah, there were exceptions. There were owners that took advantage of caregivers, and that's how the audit started. But most caregivers are extremely happy.
Especially, Ron says, the Filipino caregivers.
It's in their culture. They are kind and compassionate and loving people.
In fact, he only hires Filipino caregivers at his chain of care homes.
I've interviewed a lot of other people, and nobody really picks it up, and nobody is fulfilled by caring for the elderly the way I've seen the Filipinos do it. I couldn't find somebody that grew up like I did in the U.S. who would work and do the work, and do it as well, and do it for minimum wage.
Ron sees caregiving as just a natural career path for Filipino immigrants. I wondered what Valerie Francisco Men Chavez would think of that. She's a sociologist who grew up in a care home with her grandparents.
I don't think there's anything inherent about Filipinos taking caregiving to the elderly jobs. These are the jobs that are available to Filipinos who are coming to the United States.
Wages sent from overseas workers make up 10% of the Philippines' GDP. Valerie says it's not an accident that so many caregivers are Filipino immigrants. There's a decades-old labor pipeline that runs from the islands to the U.S., its former colonizer. In the 20s and 30s, it was farm workers. In the 80s and 90s, nurses. And now, caregivers.
There has always been a link between workers coming from the Philippines and working in the most, you know, dispensable, disposable, domestic, and sort of cheap labor in the United States.
Contrary to what Ron Simpson says, Valerie says these workers are not content to do difficult work for minimum wage because they're from a kind and loving people.
It doesn't just come from their Filipino-ness. It comes from their disempowered positions as migrant workers, newcomers to the United States, immigrants, and their lack of ability to have other people advocate for them.
This kind of exploitation is an issue in states with large Filipino immigrant communities like New Jersey and California. But plenty of other caregivers are in this same disempowered position. They're all part of an industry that's increasingly hiring immigrants and people of color. and those groups are among the lowest paid and most at risk of labor exploitation. The kind of exploitation I found in the care home industry. I took this information to Ron Simpson, and I told him that I had uncovered 1,400 cases of wage theft and other labor violations over the last decade.
How big a deal is 1,400? I mean, it sounds pretty dramatic, but it's not something I've heard before. And I don't know, what's the significance of that to you?
Well, you're in the business, so that's why we're asking you.
I know, but we're talking about what Six Beds is doing to try and educate people to be compliant, to understand what's required.
I give him a chance to take in this information and explain exactly what the numbers mean. He responds by questioning why I'm even reporting this story.
Well, I don't know how you made your decision to investigate this, but somebody's supporting it. You've been on this for a long time. We've been talking a long time. This is the second workshop you've come to, and we've talked long before that. So someone's making a big investment in this.
We are not Guns for Hire. We're independent reporters. And the reason we're doing this story is it's in the public interest. We're interested in how the industry is policing itself, how it cares for caregivers, how caregivers are being treated, and why some of them are earning $2 to $3 an hour.
Do you really believe that some of them are earning only $2 to $3 an hour?
Well, there are documents and evidence to support their stories, and we've spoken with dozens of workers who have told us that they're earning $2 to $3 an hour. What do you make of that?
Well, if I'm suspicious that that's probably not accurate, that the caregivers don't understand when they're working and when they're not.
I know my numbers are accurate. The evidence comes from federal and state investigations. And while Ron seems to be saying caregivers don't know what they're talking about, workers like Normita Lim actually do understand when they're working and when they're not.
I cook and then feed them and then clean, work all day. Straight all the way.
And while they may not always feel brave enough to speak out, employees like Sonia Deza do know when their employers have cheated them, like when Ramel forced her to return her back pay.
That's my back pay because I worked 24 hours in that facility. That was my money.
There's one thing I haven't told you about when Sonia returned that money to Ramel. Back in the Philippines, Sonia majored in business in college. So she made a calculated move. Before she handed over the cash, she made Ramel sign a document, handwritten by her as a kind of receipt.
This is to certify that I received from Sonia Deza on July 23, 2013, the amount of $8,866 in cash.
Sonia hopes that one day that document will help her get her money back.
Sonia keeps on working for Ramel, but soon an unexpected ally shows up at the care home's front door.
Then when I open the door, we have a police. Yeah, we were shocked. Don't move. We have a search warrant.
That's coming up next on Reveal. Do you want to know more about how we do what we do? Well, our weekly newsletter takes you behind the scenes. Our investigations change laws, minds, and sure, we like to say it, the world. Be among the first to read them. Just text newsletter to 474747. You can text STOP at any time. Standard data rates apply. Again, text newsletter to 474747. From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. It's a sunny September morning in the Northern California suburb of Antioch, and Sonia Deza is up and about. Her routine today is like every day. Awake at 5 a.m., make breakfast for the group of seniors she takes care of, get them fed and washed up. But on this day, something interrupts her routine.
I said, oh, who's knocking the door? It's too early. Who's that? There is a doorbell.
Sonia goes to answer.
Then when I open the door, we have a police. Yeah, we were shocked. Don't move, don't move, don't move. We have a search warrant.
The care home where Sonia works is being raided, and the man on the other side of the door wants to hear her story. Here's Reveal's Jennifer Gollin.
That man was an investigator named Jeff Swatman.
And I do fraud investigations. I'm an inspector with the Contra Costa County District Attorney's Office.
Contra Costa County is where Sonia lives. Jeff was investigating her boss, Ramel Publico. He was still paying workers what amounted to $2 an hour, even after federal regulators had busted him for ripping them off. Jeff's job is to go after employers suspected of wage theft. He's investigated a lot of care homes, and the stories are always pretty much the same.
The tenants or the patients from every case I've ever had are always well taken care of. It's really the employees that are getting the short end of the stick here.
Jeff investigated Ramel. When I first interviewed him for this story, he couldn't talk about this case because it was still pending. But he did agree to talk to me about how these types of investigations usually go without naming names. Usually, the first thing Jeff does is pose as a potential customer.
I just tell him I'm so-and-so. My father's getting to the point where I'm about ready to put him into a care home. Well, they always let you in because they want your business and they show you around.
Then he does some more research, gets a search warrant, and with that in hand, he goes back to the care home, this time as himself.
So on the day that we do the search warrant, we knock on the door.
Like that morning, he and a team of investigators showed up at the care home where Sonia was working.
The first thing we do is we contact the employees, settle them down, tell them why we're there, tell them they're not in trouble for anything.
She will show me the search warrant, then we're not hurting you. Stay there. The patient, we're scared because there's a police. We have a gun.
Besides the soap operas after lunchtime, this is the most high-stakes drama the care home has ever seen. One of Sonia's residents wants to know what's going on.
She said, Sonia, come here. Why do you have a lot of people there? I told him, you know why? Somebody, not me, not us, report to the Department of Labor. I said, that's not our problem, that's Rumel's problem.
Sonia sits down to be interviewed. She is nervous.
We are live-in. I said, we stay here 24 hours.
We document how much they're getting paid, when they get paid, how they get paid, whether they're being paid below minimum wage, whether they're being paid overtime.
I have a check, I said. You want me to show it to you? Yes, give it to me. So I show it to them. Yeah, it's my salary. $639 in 2 weeks. Do you know how much an hour? I said, almost $2. I tell to the investigator.
One thing on Sonia's mind, that $17,000 she says Ramel took from her. Sonia still has the receipt she had him sign to prove what he did. But she doesn't mention it to investigators. She's scared, and she doesn't want to lose her job. She also worries that her coworker might rat her out to Ramel. And if other care home operators find out she talked, she might get blacklisted.
That's why I have to be quiet. I'm afraid nobody will hire me.
At some point, investigators go upstairs.
And always in these care facilities, you'll find documents related to the operation of the business. And oftentimes, we also find large amounts of cash.
They banged the door there and broke the door there and get all the filings. The filings of the clients and all of us.
The investigators seize all the files and leave. The next time Ramel comes to the house, he grills Sonia.
She's angry with me. Told me that, oh, I heard you said that you work here 24 hours. I said, yes, that is true. I stay here 24 hours. You will ruin my reputation. Do you want me to be a liar? To lie to that investigator? Oh, no way. Oh, my goodness. Why did you say that? I'm telling the truth. That's why she's angry. She wants me to lie to the investigator. No.
But Ramel doesn't fire her, and life at the care home continues.
I'm still working. Continue working.
Investigators interviewed other workers who told them what Sonia was too afraid to say. That Ramel drove them to the bank, forced them to cash checks for back wages, and then took the money for himself. Jeff Swatman says what Ramel did was one of the most egregious cases he's seen, but not uncommon.
These cases take a long time to develop and to actually bring them to conclusion. And I don't have time to go out and check all these facilities.
I talked to dozens of investigators, regulators, and attorneys. They say this type of behavior is endemic in the care home industry, not just in California, but across the country. And there's probably far more than those 1,400 cases that I found. But there's another thing. When owners get caught, they rarely face the consequences.
I could do this for the rest of my life and not even scratch the surface of the wage theft and workers' compensation insurance fraud that occurs here.
About a year after the raid at his care home, Sonia's still working there. She starts noticing that something's off. Ramel and his wife, they're showing up every day.
She's painting, she's fixing all the things there. Why did you fix the care home?
When Sonia asks what's going on, they just shrug her off.
Oh, maybe we will admit the patient. I said, oh, really?
And then one day, another man shows up at the door.
Oh, did Rumella told you that he will sell this care home? I said, no. He didn't say anything about this facility.
Sonia never finds out who he is, but within weeks, Ramel shuts down the care home.
Because he sell the care home, they pull out all the patients. After that, no more. He just only said that this is already closed and you have to move. So we can move. That's it.
Just like that, Sonia lost her livelihood and her home.
Of course, I'm sad because I have no job again.
So right now, we're waiting in this hushed hallway outside this courtroom. Glenda and Ramel Publico are waiting down the hall, and Sonia Deza is waiting on a bench just outside the courtroom.
It's September of 2019, 4 months after our story first aired. Normita and Sonia are here to testify at a hearing for Ramel Publico and his wife, Glenda. It's the caregivers' first glimmer of hope that they'll get justice.
How do you feel about being here?
A little bit, you know, nervous. I just can feel it. A little bit only.
The Publicos come into the courtroom, but they walk right by us, like we're not even there.
Did they look at you guys?
No. They didn't talk at us. I don't need to talk. No talking. That's it.
Nothing.
Nothing.
The Publicos were charged with three felony counts, including tax fraud and grand theft of labor.
Should we go in there?
We couldn't record the hearing, but right afterwards, I taped myself describing what happened.
So I walk into the courtroom, and Glenda and Ramel Publico were stone-faced the whole hearing. Ramel Publico was sort of hunched over in his typical style in the blue sweatshirt that I think he wore to the last hearing. Glenda was wearing her burgundy leather jacket and white pants, looking rather prim.
So is that possible? I mean, I don't know. It's
so they're going to not have them testify today and then have them come back to try to settle the case.
So I'm going to have...
Once we step out of the courtroom, I get the Publicos' lawyers to talk to me on the record.
Is the idea to give the workers some sort of restitution?
You know, like I say, I don't personally have any further comment. I don't know about Mr. Jordan.
No further comments. It's ongoing. But Mr. Cohen will be happy to meet.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thank you.
Nice to see you.
That's all I get out of them. Normita and Sonia are disappointed they didn't get to testify. And we all leave without any idea when the next step in the process will come. Mm-hmm. even though Rommel wouldn't do an interview with me in the courtroom, he has talked to me. Over the years, I've spoken to him on the phone for hours. One time, he told me that he treated his caregivers like his own mother.
How does that square with the caregivers who were saying they were paid $2 an hour to work around the clock?
I cannot tell you how expensive everything. But you know what? I did not cheat them. They know that.
He didn't cheat them, he tells me over and over again.
What kind of deal is that? You know, that he treat his mother like that? You know? No.
It's something Normita just doesn't buy.
He screwed up. I don't know how he did it. You know, he screwed up. So that's what happened to him, you know?
In early 2020, I get word that Rommel pled guilty to 3 felonies. Charges against his wife were dismissed. I stay on this story as the pandemic unfolds. And then, in August, a judge sentences him to 3 months of home detention and 5 years of probation. This moment has been 6 years in the making since that SWAT team first showed up at the house where Sonia worked. Rommel also has to pay more than $600,000 in restitution, much of it to employees like Sonia. I get Sonia and Normita on the phone.
It's 17,732.
Sonia tells me she got a check in the mail for $17,000. The amount that Rommel took from her all those years ago.
I'm so happy, of course, because since I left to that care home, I had no permanent job. Congratulations, Sonia!
Congratulations!
Thank you so much to both of you.
Do you feel like justice has been done?
I don't know.
Justice been served! Good, right?
Sonia, you sound less sure.
I don't know if this is done or what.
Hello?
Rommel? Later that day, I give Rommel a call.
Who's this?
Hi, it's Jen Gollin from Reveal. What I wanted to find out is how you felt about the $600,000 in restitution that you're having to pay.
Okay.
Rommel?
Thank you. Have a nice... Okay, thank you. God bless you. Okay, thank you so much.
That's all he would say to me. Rommel's attorney declined an interview, saying only that the outcome is just and we plan to comply with a plea agreement. Since we spoke, I found out that Sonia will get more money from Rommel for a total of $71,000. That brings her closer to justice. But for the thousands of other caregivers who are still working around the clock for less than minimum wage, justice is still out of reach. I've reported on this story off and on for 3 years, consumed with spreadsheets, court documents, investigative files, and there's one thing I keep coming back to. At the heart of the story is how we as a country take care of people as they get older, and how we treat the people who take care of them. Even though the Publico's business closed a few years ago, Normita is still good friends with Richard Eichendorf, one of her favorite residents. She looked after him for nearly a decade.
Hello.
Hi, Richard.
Hello.
He's one of the first people Normita calls to tell the news.
Well, we got the first check from the federal. That Rommel took the money back.
She tells him about the checks she's received as part of Rommel's restitution.
Norma, you were a great help there at the home there at the time because you did a lot of things on your own. All I know is this is money that's due to Norma, no question about it. Norma, she's entitled to the compensation. I'm surprised it's taken this long, huh?
I know, it's really long.
Before Richard landed at the Publico's care home, he was living in a huge, expensive nursing home, almost $8,000 a month. He has no family, and Normita became that for him. Even during the pandemic, they call each other once or twice a week.
we have a lot of memories, you know?
We just kind of clicked like together. I don't know, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Soap opera Days of Our Lives. We used to see it together there in the afternoon.
Yeah. And then we talk about superstars, the old-timer actresses and actors.
Norma, you remember an actor by the name of Christopher Plummer?
Oh, yeah.
He was in.
Yeah.
He passed away, you know.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You remember in The Sound of Music?
Julie Andrews.
Right, yeah. Edelweiss, Edelweiss, la da 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 da, la da 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 da, la da 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 da.
Normita and Richard plan to meet up after the pandemic. In the meantime, they have the phone and their memories. Normita isn't working residential care homes anymore, but workers are still being exploited. We've uncovered more than 1,400 cases of wage theft. If you're wondering if this is happening in your community, you can search our database by visiting revealnews.org/caregivers. Again, that's revealnews.org/caregivers. While you're there, take a deeper dive into our complete coverage, including photographs of the people you heard from in the story. Today's show was reported by Jennifer Gollin. Our lead producer was Aniansi Diaz-Cortez. Jen Sheehan edited the show, but sadly, she has moved on from Reveal. Jen is my buddy. Her nickname is Money. So if you see her, just say, "Hey, Money." She'll respond. Jen, we love you. Best of luck. We had additional reporting from Melissa Lewis and Rachel DeLeon. Narda Zucchino, Michael Corey, and Andy Donahue were contributing editors. Special thanks to Diana Montano. Our production manager is Amy Mustafa. Original score and sound design by the dynamic duo, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Fernando, my man, Yo Aruda. That helped this week from Brett Simpson and Amita Ganatra. Our digital producer is Sarah Merck. Our CEO is Krista Scharfenberg. Matt Thompson is our editor-in-chief. Our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Our theme music is by Camarado, Lightning. Support for Reveals provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Heising Simons Foundation, the Democracy Fund, and the Inasmuch Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Ledson, and remember, there is always more to the story.
From PRX.